Hello, and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions. As always, I am your host, Robert Gene Pelleccio, and I have, once again, two very special guests today, continuing our Suicide Stories playwright series. We have Kat Wilson and Brian Grace Duff. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Now, Kat, you are no novice to this show. It was always a pleasure to have you on. So I don't really think there's too much more I can ask you about your theatrical history, but because you are very uniquely working with us in many capacities in Suicide Stories, I was wondering if I could first, before we get into your piece, just talk a little bit about your role on this specific project versus all the other amazing things you do for ERP.
So for this project, I'm wearing a couple different hats, but they're all super fun hats. But I wrote one of the pieces. I am still doing all the marketing, as I always do with ERP in general. And then a slightly different hat that I got to wear this time is that I got to design and technically direct the whole piece. So each of the individual 9 plays, I worked with Lauren, our director, to kind of create the settings for them, find all the pieces, build all the pieces, props and everything that we'll need, as well as the costumes and the lighting, and set up the whole space. So it's been really cool. I haven't really been able to do much designing since college. So it's been a fun ride. A little different from what I usually do, and yeah, just really fun.
Nice. And just for fun, this will be an inside joke that only Kat and I get. And listeners might be a little in the dark till I explain it. But as I've said before on this podcast, I am the production manager of the Art Mediums. So at the time of this recording, yesterday, Kat and I spent a wonderful morning traveling the magical city of Philadelphia, getting all of the art supplies needed. And at one point, our conversation turned to our various, sometimes, lack of attention and need to focus. And I picked up a very special thing earlier today, Kat, that I just wanted to share with you.
Oh, yay!
For those of you who can't see this at home, I finally am the proud owner of a fidget cube.
I am also the proud owner of a fidget cube. As soon as I saw it on screen, I almost yelled, like, yes, you have one! They're remarkable. So much better than the spinners.
Yeah, we'll get into real serious Suicide Stories topic soon, but I had to bring this up because this is it's been such a bone of contention for me, this trend right now. Kat, I'm very sorry, they did not have the rainbow ones where I found this today, so I had to settle for a gray and black one.
Okay.
But these are fidget tools. The spinners are toys. And I just have to share one quick story to just kind of lighten what's going to end up being probably a very serious talk. But for those of you, again, home, can't see this, you're listening, but I am the proud recipient of a flux capacitor tattoo on my arm. And I had a customer at one of my other jobs ask me the other day, hey, what's that fidget spinner looking tattoo on your arm?
No.
I know, it was the worst moment of my life. And I've had another customer tell me that I had a uterus on my arm. So that's
slightly better.
Slightly better. Going back on track, I needed to see Kat smile when I pulled this up. Going back on track. So moving on to Brian, who I have had the pleasure of chatting with up to this point, just talking about setting this up, this interview, but I have not had the actual opportunity to really dive into your theatrical background. So could you just speak for a little before we get to Suicide Stories about your theatrical history and your history of playwriting?
So I have real great admiration for Kat because I've done most of the jobs that she's currently doing, just not all at once. So I understand some of the pains, and I can't imagine putting them all together on top of each other. Right. So I graduated from Westchester a long time ago now, it feels like. And I, with a general theater degree, the great part about being there, it was a smaller program when I was there, and I was able to bounce around, you know, after having like the crying fit in the bathroom where you realize you're not an actor, to, that was my life, to try out some various technical elements and directing, and I started writing there, but didn't really take myself seriously as a writer. I don't think, you know, I was just trying a lot of stuff and seeing what was interesting. So I've been a stage manager, production assistant, ASM in that field. And that's where I spent a bulk of my, theatrical time. And then I did, some design, lighting design, and set design. And I got to this point where I was, after moving around through 4 or 5 different states and getting to work at the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art and out of Actors Theater of Louisville and, you know, just a couple of really great places, I found myself at a point where I was in Philadelphia and I was starting to get recognized both as a designer and getting contacted for that and having people interested somewhat in my scripts. But I got to that point where I realized I couldn't do both because when I was designing, I was devoting all of my time to design. And when I was writing, I was devoting all of my time to writing. And so I was kind of in these like dry periods of either. And so I had to choose. And I thought I could be like that completely competent designer that you would call as your second or third choice. And I decided I didn't want to be that person. And so I started writing really much more seriously at that point and started embracing all of the really smart, wonderful ideas that people have been throwing at me years about editing and about, you know, being bold with my changes in editing and really trying to find my voice. But it wasn't until I was approached to be in the writers group, The Foundry, that I felt like I had legitimacy to my work and that and also that I was really able to start to figure out what the heck my voice is. And so I've been a really proud member of that group for 3 years, and then I was part of their charter group, and then now I'm an alumnus or emeritus or whatever the term is, and just in awe of kind of the work that they're producing still. So that's the, like, you know, 45-second version of my theatrical career, but yeah, it's.
Well, I just want to ask, because I know you said you do a lot of design, yep. And other things. You said you used to act as well.
Right? I mean, just in college. I have not been on stage in a good number of years. The last thing I did, I think, was a stage reading of a comic book called Superheroes Who Are Super. It was a lot of fun, but it was also just like I suddenly realized how uncomfortable I was on stage and just my lack of desire to be there. I think this is as present as I want to be to an audience anymore. You know, the occasional talk back, but that's it.
Well, my question there is, I always love when I talk to playwrights who have worn these other hats and have these other experiences. Did your experience as an actor on stage or as a designer off the stage influence your writing style or your writing abilities in any way?
I mean, much more my design experience than my acting. You know, I think a lot of my storytelling actually comes from stage managing and just learning how to understand how a story is constructed and things. But my design has just allowed me to realize that there's so many more choices than putting words on a page as to how a story can be told. And I'd much rather embrace the things that are inherently theatrical, then I would make an actor say a bunch of things when I can give a designer an awesome sentence or two that they can do something that I couldn't really conceive of. And you know, writers like Naomi Azuka have just inspired me to like continue down that path and just pursue the impossible choices, and also those choices that just give more collaboration into my work than dictating what a design or maybe even what an actor says or does. I think that's really important as writers.
And Kat, I think we've talked about this through the various workshops, but is SS Marty your first piece, or have you done monologues before?
Pretty much the first piece, yeah. I've nice. Written here and there, but I've never read it.
I think, like a theatrical piece.
Yeah, no, I've written here and there. I've just never let people read it. I'm serious.
I'm gonna keep mentioning this on this show because it will be more fodder for me to actually follow through with it. But there is a piece of fan fiction from my favorite show, Doctor Who, buried on my Dropbox. It has been on my computer since 2013. And whenever I talk to playwrights on this podcast, many of whom have been writing for a short amount of time and just had the go ahead and guts to just go through with it, it makes me wonder why I can't do this. So, Robert, just remember, you have this ending in mind, just write the rest of it. But in all seriousness, this might be sort of an obvious answer for you, but how did you get involved with the playwriting end of this piece?
Just to kind of like follow up with what I was saying before, I actually have written a lot of monologues. And I mean, some people have read them, but I've just never really tried there, because as far as how I consider myself as an artist, writer was never really on the bill for me until the past like 2 years or so. People have read my things here and there, but this project was kind of brought up to us as a company, and was like, hey, so you know I've written things here and there, but feels very near and dear to my heart. I'd like to write something more seriously, and I think that using this as inspiration will actually make me just go and do it. And you know, put a setting behind it and everything else. So I talked to Lauren briefly about writing something, and she sort of talked me out of it just because, you know, we had people on the bill and everything, but she kept having this idea pop back into her head where she was seeing, she wanted to incorporate something regarding PTSD and somebody in the military, and kept picturing this mother who couldn't really finish her story. And every time she would get upset telling the story about her son, she had to stop and paint instead of speaking. So one night, just one random night, I was, I woke up kind of like in a cold sweat, cause I just had this very vivid dream, and I texted her. It was very early in the morning. I texted her and was just like, hey, I know you told me not to write something, but I just had this very strong idea. Can you just kind of walk me through your idea real quick? And I think I might just write something if that's fine with you. And she was like, yeah, whatever, that's cool. So she sent me her idea, and about 3 hours later, I sent her my first draft.
And it's a beautiful piece. I say this every time we read through it for every draft, that it's so powerful. And visually, I'm really excited to see where it goes visually.
Me too.
Yeah, it is really, really lovely. I in the read throughs, I was surprised to hear that you're a first time writer, or you know, first time being produced as a writer. It's just, there's so much to love about it. It's really nice.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So what can, as someone who's never, I know you've written before, but as someone who's never given something forward to be produced, how has this experience been for you as kind of a first time produced writer?
It's been scary and then just very exciting. Like, you know, directing and designing and acting, you're always, you know, sort of creating something and wondering how it's going to come out. But with this, I mean, it's a totally different animal. You created something completely from your mind. And it's just not in your hands at all, in a way. And that's very new for me. So even just hearing it, I reached out to so many different people just to have them read it so I could hear it out loud. Because even though we do the ears, Elf and Ears reading series, since I'm usually on the acting side of it, I didn't realize just how we're doing a really cool thing, like just how helpful it is to really just hear your words over and over again, and how beneficial it is to be able to like keep writing from there. So it's just been cool to like hear people take something that I thought would go one way and it goes a completely different way, and I'm just like, oh my god, that's better, you know. And hearing how it's growing and you know, like you were saying, being able to see it eventually too. I'm just really, really excited.
Can I just say how smart I think that is, that you took that opportunity to really listen to the actors and use them as tools, because there is such a fear with it, and there's so much hesitancy to give something over that's incomplete. For you to be able to do that and learn from it quickly, like that's, the fear never goes away, but it's always so much more comfortable once you get it out there and once you start working on it in those capacities. So good for you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I can say the hardest thing, like for me to think, I'm currently involved in a ongoing workshop elsewhere at Hedgerow Theater, and it's the biggest challenge is just seeing helping that playwright along with what can stay and what can go, what'll help the piece, how the actors are helping move that piece along. And it's incredible to see how much of the piece gets specified while still retaining the central concept, the core theme that you want to get out there.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's a little bit of a challenge for me to ask some of these questions, because I don't want to put either of you in a position where you're giving away more than you would like to before the show goes up. But just based on what you've said before about the theme of the piece, why did you pick this particular medium and this particular topic related to suicide to go together?
So I kind of didn't. It was more so Lauren, which was fine. But the reason I kind of clung to it, because I think if I hadn't, I don't think I would have had the dream if she hadn't talked about it so passionately and so vividly, because I don't really have many personal ties to the military or anything like that. And I was kind of worried about even writing about it. And, you know, thinking back to my first draft, I was like, wow, I screwed a lot up. Just a lot of like specific details about the military. But the painting aspect was the thing that really stood out to me and the reason why I fell into it completely. Because I've always been, and I talk about this a lot on social media, like through doing the marketing for this and everything, and even in the piece itself, I've been synesthetic. I've had synesthesia since I was little. So everything always has a color to me. Everything, every person, every sound, everything. So once what the dream kind of evolved and what I wanted to put into the piece was, while I was writing it, beneath each paragraph, I would just write a color. And that paragraph would have that color, or the people that she spoke about in that paragraph would have certain colors, and they would kind of swirl together, and I would see what color it would end up as. And then in the stage directions, which everybody's been able to see, like, well, people have been able to see while reading it, but they won't, they'll see in a completely different way when it actually gets staged, the colors that match each paragraph and person that she talks about, end up being the colors that she paints with.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I got into it and why I was able to really push forward with the idea of using the military, which ended up being such a cool experience for me because I got to talk to so many veterans because I was just like, all right, I don't know about this. I have to learn about it. But using kind of like my strong background synesthetically and then their strong background, it was able to come together really cool.
Well, I guess my question for them, I'll open it up to both of you. Kat, you've pretty much already answered this question just now, but what was the, since the pieces were more or less planned out with their art mediums, what were some of the challenges of matching that art medium to your piece and your topic? Kat, I know it seems to have come very naturally to you because of your connection to colors, but was that at all a challenge for you, Brian, getting your art medium to meld with
I mean piece? I think there were certain aspects of it that were really difficult, but just having the clarity of what the overall shape of the evening was going to be from the beginning, it became more of a tool that I could put in my bag of, you know, how am I telling this story? What do I want to relate to it? And just knowing that was the action of the play was an artist sketching in charcoals, really just grounded me in needing certain things and telling a story in a certain way. But it gives you great moments of kind of breaking. Because monologues have a tendency to just be, not have form, you know? And so I had this thing where, the artist continually, messes up his costume, which, I'm sure my costume designer wife is really happy about. but you know, so.
Yeah, I understand that's been an interesting discussion behind the scenes.
I'm curious to talk to Lauren about that.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's wonderful. I love it.
but so that action and then the realization of what he's doing was just a great anchoring moment in reality, because it's so easy to make monologues about everything that's going on in your head and then to have something physical that you have to have in there. It's really great and it's really important, because otherwise, yeah, you just end up in a world of ideas and not in a world of things, and the things are what always drives a scene to me.
Well, then I'll segue into, since you already kind of just started talking about your character in this, what would you like the audience to know about this piece going into it? What can you tell me about, I forget what it was.
Yeah. Called. I mean, I don't think there's much that I think an audience needs to be prepped with. Other than kind of what they come into the evening with, knowing these are very deliberate stories about suicide and kind of having that caveat or that trigger warning, I think is essential. And so I'm so proud of the production kind of putting that right in the title and having it be in no way hidden or shocking, because then you have people that are really ready to be engaged by that. So I think that's what I want, is the audience to be ready to kind of go beyond some of like the platitudes of suicide is sad and suicide is tragic, and really be able to talk about what's under it, which is usually a lot of mental health issues and a lot of pretty severe trauma. So that's definitely, you know, the mental health issues are definitely true in my play, and I don't think that we should have to shy away from them, and I'm really happy to be part of a production that is going to talk about them in hopefully a really humane way. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and with the idea of it being in the title, I mean, Brian, you just said that so beautifully. Like, they already have they already know what they're in for. So I think the part that's going to be like kind of shocking and interesting to people with each piece is that like it's not all sad, you know?
Your piece is so hilarious. And there's definitely not that there's not humor in yours as well, Kat. Yours is also very there's a different kind of humor. It's a very warm humor, especially in the beginning with some of the painting stuff. And we talked to the last episode. We talked to Chris and David about their pieces. And I mean, Chris has that second character in his, which is very unique that we talked about. But I mean, his is also his. A lot of his humor is in his stage directions, so much so that we talked about this in the last episode, but it's very evocative of one of my favorite screenwriters, John Swartzwelder, whose stage directions are often so funny that they have to get converted into dialogue so that the audience can, like, the writers of The Simpsons would constantly look at his scripts and go, we need someone to say this. This can't just be our,
right?
Like, everybody needs to share in this,
right?
I never, going into this process, I know that there's humor in everything, but it's really not the first thing on your mind when you hear this theme, this topic. It's not the first, you don't expect to laugh.
I have a weird little tidbit. So I obviously we've been doing the marketing for this since we really figured out that we were going to do it back in December, and we had our first crowdfunding campaign back in January and February. And I was driving. I was in like a I had a 2-hour drive with my dad somewhere. I think we were going to my nephew's christening or something like that. And we had about 15 days left in the crowdfunding campaign. And it was the first time I had been running it as the marketing director. And I had just been like stressed about, you know, where else to kind of like send this to people so they could see that we were telling this great story and like to maybe donate to us and different things. And I said to him, I was like, I'm just struggling with, you know, figuring out how to say suicide and making people feel okay. And he immediately was like, well, you know, I never want to hear the word suicide and feel okay. And I was just like, that's a really good point, you know, like, and that's not why.
And I mean, it kind of goes into why we're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, and I think it made me really sit down for the rest of the day and be like, why did we use this title? You know, because like, was it a bad thing? Like, you know, people are gonna be like, oh, no, we can't talk about that. But like, no, you're right. Like, that's the whole point, is to make people be like, no, we have to talk about this. And, you know, not in like a... not like a fun one, like, we're going to talk about suicide now, but it's like, no, we like actually get to say this and bring it to people. They have that warning, and then we get to make them feel better. And that's just really cool.
Yeah, and I remember that was our biggest issue with getting this started in the first place, was because as we've talked about on every Suicide Stories podcast, the initial idea was very, very different. The initial idea was Laramie Project-esque, where we were actually getting real stories and performing real stories. And we found that we were not able to get enough people. Enough people wanted to talk about the subject, but it was such a taboo. It was so close to people that we were having trouble getting someone to specifically talk about them. So I think this is a very, very interesting way to get all of these elephants out of the room, per se, in a way that still can feel personal, because everyone can relate to each of the topics we have on display, even if these stories are not all 100% true.
Yeah, and what we ended up with, cool, because it's kind of like a 50-50 draw of like personal testimonies and just really really well created stories that definitely could have happened too.
So I guess to wrap up, I'll wrap up on the same question that I asked Chris and David in the last episode, which is, why should people come to see this production? Either whoever wants to take the reins, go ahead and jump in.
Kat, do you want to jump in? I mean, I have answers. Sure. I just don't know if I don't have articulated answers.
Yeah. I feel like I like answered this in my mind earlier, and now I'm just like, I don't know. There's so many there's so many reasons why people should come see it. But I think the real reason is just there's just so much heart behind this. There's so much good. Like there's with any show, you get stressed, and you never know, you know, how it's going to be opening night and blah blah blah. But like at the end of the day, I mean, everything could go wrong in this, and the message would still be so strong. And the people that are behind it would still be so heartfelt and have been working so hard. And again, at the end of the day, like we're raising money for different charities and foundations. Like that alone is a great reason to come out, you know, just to be able to not only like support local art and support really talented people, but to support suicide awareness and mental health awareness and all of that. I think it's going to be completely different from any fringe show, any show. I mean, just working on this, we've all done so many different work on so many different facets of theater, and I don't think anybody has done something like this, and I can say that very confidently. It's just completely new, and you don't get to just see one play, you get to see nine, and hear from nine different people. And I didn't get to say this before, but I wanted to compliment Brian really quick, because you so kind to me, but your piece was one of the first ones that we read when we first, you know, got the first drafts, and this was before I had even written my piece. And we read yours, and it not only like inspired me to feel okay to write something with another art medium, because you had done it so flawlessly already in the first draft, and it's only built since then. But it was a really nice breakup to the evening, because, you know, to go along with the story I was telling about my dad, like it made me realize, like, no, you can tell these stories and be okay at the end of the day. You can laugh. Oh,
thank you. You know, thank you. Yeah.
And it was just, it did inspire me, like when I was writing, and I don't think I like remembered it until you were talking about it, but I was like, oh my God, yeah, that was one of the reasons I was like, I could do this. I really, like, I just went gung-ho with putting the colors and, like, the art medium right in the piece, because you had done that too, and I was like, this is easy, but, like, it made it so much easier, and it made it flow, and everybody's just done a flawless job at doing that, and, yeah, everybody should come see it.
Nice. And Brian, as someone who is outside of the company who's joined us for this wonderful experience, what are your thoughts on the far-reaching goal?
I think Kat really hit something that I want to echo, which is the idea of heart in this show and in this production. I think it's very easy to find a topic that you want to talk about and then make a really strong statement, you know, like this is good or this is bad or whatever. It's much more complicated to say this is the breadth and complexity of it, and then to trust an audience to continue the conversation or to make decisions on their own, and especially the way that you have the evening set up where people are going to be choosing what they see next to a certain extent, that's a lot of trust in the audience. So I think that the great amount of faith that is put in each aspect of the production, and that it's a shared experience, you know, I think that all this direct address to an audience from an actor is a tremendous amount of trust. These very personal stories, especially for those of us that are writing from personal experiences, a tremendous amount of trust. So I really admire those aspects, and I'm really grateful that, you know, when I came into the process and Lauren approached me about it, I initially said yes, but, and the big but was that I was going to that I was going to work in a lot of humor, and that was really my goal from the beginning, because I think that humor humanizes, and I think that there's so much that's human about these plays, and not just about the issue. And now in the title, knowing what the issue is, really frees us to go into it and see what the humanity of it is. And I think that that's what's missing so much from, you know, most of the important things that we see in the world that are difficult. So I'm really excited to be part of something that looks at the humanity of an issue and not at the issue itself, or in addition to the issue itself.
Perfect. Well, like I said, I've been following this from the very beginning. I've been on, I've been a production team member of this, and I have been blown away by each step of this process, each step getting us closer to where we are, which is, at the time of this record, as Kat pointed out to me yesterday, just about a month away. Well, Kat and Brian, thank you so, so much for coming on and talking with me today. Before we go, Kat, would you like to tell people where they can get tickets to this wonderful artistic venture?
Heck yes. So we are all over on Instagram. You can probably link any of the sites. You can also get it on our website. We have a Suicide Stories tab. If you scroll down, you can see all of the plays, all the playwrights, all the actors, everything in between, as well as tickets. You can get it on Fractured Atlas's website. You can also get Jar's website. So we got a lot, so no excuses. Buy it.
I love the demand for people to come see it. But you should. Well, thank you. Thank you again for joining us today. Suicide Stories Gallery of the Untold opens September 12th at Asian Arts Initiative in Philadelphia. Please, please get your tickets now. And join us next month when we will have closed this very, very successful production. Until next time, I'm Robert Gene Pelleccio. Have a great day. Enjoy theater.